Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah. How does everyone sound, Matt?
You sound great. I sound fantastic.
Sexy.
Oh, very.
Me? Yeah.
Oh, you sound
everyone
great,
good.
Jonah.
Delightful.
I do.
Is that the sum total of your contribution to the show?
Me? Delightful. Me?
What do I?
Turn your mic. Turn it to the.
So the front of it's facing.
The front. Yeah.
Is that the front?
No. The front has the button on it. The little mic clip.
Oh.
Oh, why did
there
I say
you
that?
Go.
There we
How
go.
How was it now?
Yay.
All right, try it again. Me?
You.
And also, too, you want to go up a little.
Andy Richter. Oh, this is Andy Richter, by the way.
Thanks.
Sound engineer.
Ah.
There. No, that's guns. You want to talk.
Now, right that now. Is a guy who knows how to work a mic stand.
Andy, you're going to make me not slouch. This
well,
is
no.
not good. This is too. This sitting up straight is good for my self-esteem.
I know.
I know. That's why hipsters have to slouch. You got to get below the confidence line.
Exactly. I just got to
You
got to
keep
down.
Your posture so
I
your
can
spine.
Really leer at everybody.
Just the perfect curve.
This is the judging, you know.
Yeah, because when you're up, you kind of get a view of everything, and you're like, hey, we're all the same, and everything's fine. But then when you get down, you can start judging on several levels of irony.
Look at their pants. They fit.
You can really revel in your double chin.
That's right. And then we just squash
like to take it
down.
Back. I like to be taken aback. Yeah.
I wonder if I can put anything ironic in my chin space. this is the Nerdist Podcast. I'm Matthew Myers on my left. There's Jonah Ray over there.
Speaking into the mic directly.
And Andy Richter is here.
Hi there.
I'm sorry.
Please email the show and tell me about the increase in Jonah's vocal quality.
you know what? We do get audio nerds who are like, I like the podcast, but you got to fucking fix the sound, buddy. And I'm like, hey, thank you for enjoying your free entertainment.
I wasn't actually talking right into my microphone either.
They're
going to
complain
now
about the echo again.
We can't help the echo. We're in a room made of glass in a conference room on the fourth floor of the Comcast building. And this is unfortunately...
Drive by and look at us.
And this the whole place is surrounded with tall, blonde South Africans wearing gray suits and carrying submachine guns.
Yes, we're under some type
Just
of martial
you want echo.
Some
That's
type of military. Martial law.
And also, as I was pointing out before we started, these chairs, they're very bouncy.
They are bouncy chairs.
Terrible for a podcast.
These are horrible chairs, not the worst chairs in the building. I think each conference room has even more horrible chairs than these.
They try to outdo each other.
Yeah.
This is... I think everyone will agree that every element of the setup of this is probably not right for any kind of broadcasting.
Someone will always find something wrong.
You could hang packing blankets from the ceiling.
Let's do that.
That constitutes trying.
Yeah.
We'd rather not.
No, see, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
See, when Jonah just said we'd rather not try, he slumped down a little bit to get back in. You're like a transformer, but a hipster. So the way a hipster transforms, just and then you slouch.
Sorry, take what you can get. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. But instead of that sound, it's Belle and Sebastian that comes out.
Yeah.
Guys, I have to gush for a second about a show. I did a show last night that was one of the most amazing shows I've ever been a part of. Ed Helms has a bluegrass band, and so he put together this bluegrass weekend at Largo, where Friday Steve Martin played banjo, and he apparently played King Tut, and I missed it, and I'm heartbroken
on a stage that you were on.
And I did last night, and these musicians, it was like half a Nickel Creek, and the guy who played keyboards for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Sarah Silverman and Will Arnett and Paul Scheer and Tom Lennon. It was a super fun show. And then afterwards, the musicians were like, let's go to the little room at Largo and jam. I literally tripped over Jackson Brown as he was unpacking his... I planted my knee right in his fucking back.
Well, he's so little.
Well, he's not that little. He was crouched down, perfect knee-hitting height. And then watch them jam for like an hour and a half in the little room.
The
it
Nickel
was crazy.
Nickel Creek has a great cover of Pavement, Spit on a Stranger. That's when I started listening to Nickel Creek.
They covered Morrissey last night.
Oh, really?
It was phenomenal.
Tom Lennon lose his shit when they covered Morrissey?
Yeah, he did. He was standing right behind me. And I turned around and we just had that, holy shit, dude! Yeah.
The first time that's ever been said to a Morrissey song. Holy shit, dude, it's the Morrissey.
Well, these days it's more, Dios mío. Because he has a very large Latino base.
He does. Yep. That's one of my favorite things about him. It's so hilarious.
Well, what did you like about him before?
Hey, huh? Large Latino.
No, I mean, I liked him on face value first, and then when it turned out and I moved here, and like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Every Cholita and Cholo loves Morrissey.
They love.
Just to let the listeners know, Andy Richter is white.
Yep. Yeah,
yeah. Just in case you didn't catch that.
Just in case you've never seen television.
Yeah. No, but I really, it's not like they're, you know, Tears for Fears fans, although, you know, in Southern California, that was something that struck me when I first came here, is the amount of, like, new wave pussy rock that tough dudes in California listen to, like Depeche Mode.
Yep.
Like, you will find Jughead idiots go on the, like, fucking Mode, man. They're awesome.
The Mode. And
it's crazy to me because that was always faggy pussy music where yep. I grew up, you know? So
I don't think anyone's going to...
Can I swear like that on this? I
think faggy pussies are the best kind of pussies, though.
Yeah.
What kind of pussy are you?
Does this pussy make my pussy look fat? Yeah, I like the idea of Latino Tears for Fears fans.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe we can start that as a movement?
I wouldn't be. I bet you there's a lot of them anyway.
Is there a reason behind
you
the Latino
Morrissey? That's the other thing. I'm not.
I'll tell you what. It's two things. I think there's I read an article about it. There's an aesthetic quality. They kind of like that sort of that mod 50s
yeah. how he okay. looks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then also. I think the other they interviewed a lot of Latinos about it, and part of it is he came from like a working class English town, and so they relate to his music. They relate to what he's saying in his music, and so
but
I think
he also speaks to a florid dramatic streak that runs strongly through the Hispanic community, like a total sleeping like fainting couch. Even the toughest of the tough will you know
yeah.
There's like a Latin sort of romanticism that I think he really embraces.
Every Latino has a little Morrissey inside.
It's like Italians who, you know, I mean, these are all, of course, cultural stereotypes, which, you know, I mean, you can, you know, they're like, so it's, yeah, like, yeah, it doesn't they, hold up in they, court, but in conversation, it's truth. Fine. But,
yeah.
but like Italians are fiery and fighting and all this stuff. But also think about like the opera, you know, like maudlin self, you know, just luxuriating in your own suffering.
Yeah. Because there's that tough exterior and then that like poor well, me.
Do you think that's like just like the Catholic guilt then? If it's like Italian and it's Latino, do you think it's just
I don't know. I don't go any further than just noticing it. Look at that. No, I mean, I don't know if I mean, I'm not Catholic, so that I don't. My wife is, and so I kind of have awareness of how Catholicism touches things, but it's not anything that occurs to me. I only get it.
Catholicism touches things in many ways.
Sort of intellectually, you know. I don't know what it means to be Catholic, and I've been there, and when you go and you see. Obviously, I don't speak Italian, but go there and watch TV, and like there'll be a Vatican show. It's obviously a Vatican show. It's from the Vatican. And on that same channel, 2 hours later, there's topless women, you know, doing chat shows. You're sort of like, oh, there's a contradiction going on in this country.
I just think that culturally...
There's a lot going on at once.
Culturally, as humans, we can have a crusty exterior and a sweet pussy center.
Right,
I think that's really... Except for the Germans.
I was going to say molten chocolate. Lava cakes.
It's much nicer.
Brown and hard on the outside.
Sweet, sweet pussy center. I wish they would advertise Three Musketeers that way. Chocolatey on the outside, sweet pussy center. Three Musketeers.
What are they doing with a literally pussy.
That's the tagline. Yeah. No, not literally pussy.
Just, you know, vulnerable.
Boy.
Like a pussy.
I'll tell you what, I sure love me some figurative pussy. I don't know about you guys. So what are you on a break right now?
I mean, I'm unemployed.
Temporarily.
No, I'm actually not even technically unemployed. It just feels like it because I'm under contract with NBC until the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the show. I mean, I was an employee of NBC working on a show, and that show went off the air, so I'm still under contract to it.
Oh, okay.
It's not like I did anything.
Right.
You know?
Well, maybe if you had, you'd be on still.
Well, no, I just mean like from a contractual standpoint. So they have to pay me until the end of May. And then we're working on this tour, but I'm pursuing other things. I kind of was like, there were a few weeks where I was like, I'd only had, well, 10 months. It was 7 on the air and then like 3 prior to the show going on the air. I'd only had about 10 months to get used to having a supposedly, you know, unimpeachable job.
Well, that's the thing. And as any performer, as anyone who works in this business knows, you are kind of ground. Your will is ground into a nub to the point where you never feel secure ever.
You never trust anything.
And so you're always waiting for someone to tap you on the shoulder and go, "All right, time's up."
Yeah. Right.
And
so you can go, "Of course."
Of course. But right. But particularly in your case, it was like, "Holy shit! If they're not safe, nobody's safe."
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It really was kind of a dramatic wake up call to everyone who has any kind of job that you just can never feel 100%
safe. Unless any bitches out there start saying, "Oh, well, boo hoo, you know, like, too bad you didn't get your job that you couldn't lose." Like, I am speaking from a place of realizing I'm tremendously lucky.
Right.
That's the baseline.
Right.
I've been really successful. I make a living at this. I have a nice life. I have a happy family. But it's still my life. And I still got to worry about paying for those kids. And, you know.
You bought your kids?
No, but you have
kids
to pay
for them. Kids are
expensive. You get them for free, and it's like a dope habit. You get them for free, and then
you just
got to
get
pay,
more.
Pay.
Yep. Then you got to buy
the wife's the pusher.
But, you know, granted, this is not real world problems or anything, but it certainly was, you know, it's if you work in show business, it's more like a career or a business, an industry interest. Because it is, it's an interesting thing that happened within an industry that's incredibly insecure and incredibly just, you know, incredibly fucks you over is what I was going to
say.
Well,
I think anyone can understand. I mean, from the basic standpoint of, as part of human nature, you want to work and you want to contribute and you want to stay employed. It doesn't matter how glamorous your job might appear to other people.
Right.
It's still, as a human being, you got fucked over.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
It's not, yeah. I don't think anyone's going to be like, "Yeah, that asshole, tell him to put on his Morrissey albums and shut the fuck up."
Oh, no, there's a lot of people that say shit like that.
No, I know.
There's a lot of people. Like, I made the mistake of, well, and it's not even a mistake because it's ultimately kind of, at one point when something happened, I, you know, looked at news items about, maybe it was when the tour came out or something, and then I scrolled all the way down to see the comments.
Don't.
There's just so many people, and it's crazy too. It makes me end up thinking, like, there's got to be, because there's like a couple of sites that are just kind of, you know, like, gossipy show busy sites that are obviously a for-profit enterprise,
mm-hmm.
that would, you know, there would just be so much different than the other ones in terms of their opinion. Like, there's just like one would be like so full of people that were pro Leno,
right?
And then there'd be another one that would be so full of people, it was just all people that loved us.
Wait, Leno people knew how to use the computer?
I mean, I'm more inclined to believe that there's a I'm less inclined to be suspicious of the pro Conan web group because that just makes more sense to me.
Yeah,
like,
younger.
Why are there people like seemingly a number of pro Leno people prowling the chat boards on a gossip site? It
this
makes
group
me think,
moms
like,
on Facebook yeah. really.
Well, I'm glad
what
Leno's
makes me
back.
Think is I wonder if that website is owned by NBC.
It's possible,
you know. Yeah. And then and so they just hire guys that work around the office to be like, you know. my name is, you know, Deborah K67.
Right.
And I love Jay Leno.
They would make it more realistic if they just put, like, a link to a cute cat video right after. It's like, I love Leno. Well, check out my nephew's cat.
Or there's, like, a kitten avatar. Like, somebody, really being angry now, about, is that like the Conan Jay situation with a kitten avatar.
Is that, like, their avatar is a picture of a kitten or a kitten from Avatar, like a blue cat? I just want to get...
I don't know if
the animated series or the film?
Oh, he's talking about the Last Airbender versus James Cameron's Avatar. Mm.
For those of you at home,
yes,
following,
it's along. A nerdy podcast. Those people would have known
The Last Airbender.
Yeah,
they had a giant cat with flapped with his ears. The Na'vi of James Cameron's Avatar didn't have cats. There were no cats at Home Tree.
And a zebra buffalo.
Giant pterodactyls.
Well, it is like the whole thing is. It was amazing how it overtook just like pop culture in general for a period of time and how polarizing it was.
Avatar or the Conan O'Brien thing?
All of it.
It was all that was online.
It was crazy. I couldn't. I don't even think I still fully got my head around.
Did you guys? You must have just had moments because I mean Jimmy Pardo was doing warm up on the show. Yeah. I had a ton of friends who worked on that show, and there must have just been a collective moment where you guys were looking around like, "Is this fucking really happening? Is this really happening?"
Yeah, I think probably. Well, there a lot of the people there. I feel like I was in the minority because I had been used to. Like, I have been used to, like, constructing a complete fantasy scenario based on the inevitable success of the show that I'm working on.
Right.
You know, like, all the things we're going to do and the places we're going to go we're going to buy.
Those Homer Simpson dreams where you're in a tuxedo on top of a gold house.
Yeah. I've had a number of experiences with that, having to, like... You know, those fantasies being popped like a pin in a balloon going, oh shit.
Right.
Oh my God. I gotta get another job.
Well.
And so for me, there was a couple days of holy shit, I can't believe it. And then sort of like, oh, all right, yeah.
Well, I'm not on the same scale as what you guys went through, but I mean, you know, I've been working a really long time, and I've had way more failed stuff. It's like stuff that you think is going to be the thing that tips it, and then it's just like, oh, and then it goes away.
Yeah.
But you know, you're a testament to, no matter how shitty you get fucked over, you just fucking gotta get back up and learn a lesson from it, and you keep going.
I do feel, and I got to remind myself of this. Like, this is a really fun industry to work in, and it's. And it is to just be at the point where I am making my living at it is pretty great and puts me in a very, you know, luxurious minority. Mm-hmm. So I got to always know that it's, you know.
That would explain the cape that you wore and your top hat and cane.
It's really a fun job and you got to keep going at it because it's like, well, of course, I think like the yin is so good if the yin is the good one. The yang is, you know, there's going to be some shit.
Yeah.
Life balances itself out. So if you're going to get to do something this fun, you're going to make a lot of stomach acid. Right. You know, that's just the price you're going to pay. You're going to have to deal with, like, pretty heavy disappointment at times, you know? And that's just like, well, you know what? Because you get to fucking eat cake for a living. Like, that's... When you get a job, it's so sweet. What do? You cock around and be an asshole and get paid, you
right.
know?
Yeah. Right.
It's really fun.
That's true. It's not like getting laid off at the one steel mill in town.
Right. Oh, like, shit, where am I going to go? And
well, not only is my career over, my life is over. Yeah. Well, it's just nice that... It's nice that you guys were able to come away with it and still sort of feel like, all right, we can still... You know, I mean, obviously... Personally, I think it could have been the best thing that happened because wherever else you guys go, and I don't know, are you talking about where you guys are going?
Well, I mean, we're talking nothing more than it's what's in the paper. We're talking to Fox. It looks good.
I mean, in the
story.
Well, number one.
You go on Fox, it will always be better than the other talk show they had, the Chevy Chase show.
Right.
It's like that.
I hope so. I think it's pretty safe to
assume. I think it's going to be great because, number one... Well, one of you walked away with a lot of money. I don't know what your deal was, but
no, I'm getting paid. You get paid well. Working, yeah.
Yeah, you get paid to not work.
Yeah, but there's a slight difference.
I'm sure there's a little bit of a difference.
A lot of people that
like
was
45. Also, you probably got like 42.
That was also of the entire thing. One of the things that was really truly irritating was and it wasn't just me. It was people like Jimmy Pardo, or for those of you who don't know, does the in-studio warm-up for us, who's a hilarious...
Never Not Funny is his podcast, and you should listen to it. He's amazing.
He's got a hilarious he's a hilarious, wonderful guy. And, you know, he was one of the people there that immediately upon it being details of the so-called settlement being leaked, where he was getting Facebook messages and emails from people from his past going like, well, enjoy your golden parachute. Which is like, you know.
By the way, I don't think a golden parachute would work well. I mean, gold is heavier than air. You would instantly hit the ground.
Yeah, but you'd look so good doing it.
That would be a very shiny death.
Yeah. But you would have a gold dome to preserve your remains.
But I tell you what, though, no one would forget that. Guy fucking rained down in a shower of gold.
Boom!
Hey, he's dead, but gorgeous.
The fucking glorious mistake, man.
He died in a shower of gold.
That's pretty good. Thanks.
Yeah. Lo siento.
No, but anyway, so people, there were a lot of people that just assumed we all made a gazillion dollars.
Well, I think ultimately... You know, you're still getting money and you're going to go somewhere else. And what's great is I think it really helped corral your audience because there's such a tremendous outpouring of support, you know, for the people who are pro Conan and pro you. And I think wherever you go next, they're going to be extra cool to you guys and you're going to get to make, you know, whatever kind of show you want to make. And I think it's going to be really great.
I hope so.
I'm excited about it. I'm genuinely excited to see
what
happens.
All that stuff about they'll let you do whatever you want to do, I sort of feel like... Yeah, we'll see. You know, they'll say that, sure, but we'll see.
Andy, take your cock out of your pocket. Oh, really? I just wanted to fold it around just for the opening segment. Nah, you can't do whatever you want to do.
All right.
By the way, just in case anyone wants to know, Andy told me that his PIN is cock. So if you ever steal his ATM card,
he walked up to me on the ATM in the lobby,
and I go, I don't want to look at your PIN, and he goes, I'll just tell you what it is. It's cock.
Yeah. Can't forget that.
I said, in anybody's account you try and hack, try that one first, because you will find it 80% of the people use cock as their PIN number.
It'd be weird if there was some sort of bizarre Arthur C. Clarke thing that no one figured out, but that everyone has the word cock as their PIN. And it's just some sort of weird alien subconscious mind control, and we just never...
Or some super genius who... figures out this technology, but doesn't have any idea how to use it.
Yeah,
just I'm gonna make everybody use cock as their PIN.
Really, you can get money.
Shit! Now I'm dead. My secret will go with me.
The guy's like, no, it's just really funny. Yeah. I just want everyone's PIN to be cock.
Pretty good, huh?
You know,
I guess.
Ladies and people of Earth, you know how your PIN is cock. You're welcome.
Now, excuse me, I'll jump out of this plane with my golden parachute.
That was a good bit, guys. Let's there's some good yes ending there.
Let's put this thing on pause and rest for a while.
I brought pillows.
2 hours later, the high five stopped.
Yeah, what we need right now is to all high five in the middle and just have, you know, like a 38 special song play and credits roll, and like that's the end of our movie. Take me back to paradise. Did you do a lot of live stuff? I mean, I see you at the UCB sometimes. You do. I've seen you do ASCAT before.
Yeah.
Are you doing a lot of live stuff?
Not right now. I mean, I'm. You know, people ask me to come do shows and stuff, and I'll do that to a certain extent, and then sometimes I won't because I'll just stay home. No, well, it's, you know, I got two kids, and so I'll go do stuff for friends of mine and, you know, people that I know. And it's fun to get out, but I'm 43 years old. I no longer have the feeling of, like, I got to get out on a stage and make people laugh.
I got to make
them much more likely be like, I got to get to bed.
You're just
early.
Pressing your eyebrows down. I'm going to make them like me tonight.
I'm 27 and I have that feeling already. Honestly, I could go and do that basement show at the Ramada in Vermont, or I could just watch Lost again.
Yeah. Or I could relax after a hard day at work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I got a kid that wakes up anywhere from 5:45 to 6:45.
What a piece of shit.
That is bullshit.
She is an asshole. Yeah. She is an asshole.
How old is she?
4.
Oh. So she's still... Oh, my God. The hipster.
It gets worse and worse with this one, huh?
Yep.
Kids. Yep. What a waste of sperm. Hipsters.
It's so how hipsters are made.
Yeah. No, man. We take that back.
We were miraculously born at a Yola Tango concert. Came out of the amps.
I crawled out of a vintage t-shirt pile. Did you ever do stand-up?
No.
Never did stand-up.
I did improv.
Yeah.
I was from the improv world in Chicago. I never was comfortable that much with being on stage alone.
It's so funny so funny how divided people can get on the improv or sketch versus stand-up thing, where some people just love to be in the moment, and then other people have to be characters. They can't go on stage and be themselves. And me, I'm a bad character on stage. I always will just pull off the wig and be like, all right, you know it's me. Here's what this bit's about.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I just can't. I'm the worst.
What I'm going to do here is put this wig crooked. See?
It was two things. Not wanting to be, which I was talking to Brian Stack, who's a writer on the, a Conan writer who came up with me in improv in Chicago, and he said the same thing. He's like, I have no interest in being on stage by myself. He's just like, it never appealed to me. And I also, coming up, and it's probably early imprinted prejudice based on being on training in improv, the notion of like saying the same stuff over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, I was like, why the fuck would you want to do that?
You know, it's interesting. I think most stand-ups, when they start, kind of have that idea in their head where they're like, my set's going to be different every time I go up.
Yeah.
And then you realize, A, you fucking run out of material.
Yeah, yeah.
And B, there is a craft to like whittling stuff down into its most essential parts and then tagging it off and making it
seem fresh every time.
Yeah. By the way, tagging it off is a great phrase for something. I don't know what it's going to be, but I like the phrase tagging off.
It sounds very masturbatory.
It is a little masturbatory.
Were you tagging one off in there?
Are you tagging one off?
Stand-up is very masturbatory.
But it almost sounds feminine. She's tagging one off in there.
Tagging one off.
Because it just sounds like a slap a little bit. like playing the washboard.
Sure, yeah.
Playing the washboard.
A friend of mine in New York, who actually he's from Canada, and he has a brother who's a stand-up comedian, so he's familiar with him. We were having lunch. My wife and he and I were having lunch, and a guy that we know who's a stand-up comedian came up and said hello and stood talking to us. And it was a fairly benign conversation, but he walked away, and my friend David said, is he a stand-up comedian?
Oh, that's the worst.
And we said, yeah, why? And he said, oh, it was just that he's sort of dripping with hostility.
Wow,
that's really perceptive. Because I was used to the other guy. I was like, it didn't seem that unusual to me. He's like, yeah, he seems really hostile.
That's actually not, I thought you were going a different direction with that, which is the what?
He was going to bit a bunch.
You're doing bits. Yeah. Where you can tell if a comic is trying to steer something in the direction of a bit that they want to try out.
Yeah,
I know. You guys, it's great that you saw Avatar. Hey, have you had salads lately? What's going on with salads?
I have had a salad.
There's nothing worse.
Oh, that's terrible.
There's nothing worse than being a comic and then saying something and having someone go, wait, are you doing a bit right now? Yeah. Like, you feel so exposed.
It makes you feel like you're not allowed to be funny in conversation anymore.
Jonah and I in New York, Jonah would have to keep saying, by the way, this is not a bit.
I'm just disclaimer. Saying,
it's like I want to just hang out and have fun conversations with my friends like I have my entire life before I ever did comedy.
Right.
And then, like, I remember, like, even the friends I had at the time, when I was living in San Pedro, I had friends, and then I started doing stand-up, and then, like, I would just hang out the exact same way I always did, but then they would have to stop me. I was like, is this material? Are you trying to do bits?
Oh.
I was like, I'm the same way. Like, it's really infuriating.
Which
reminds me, have you guys ever...
That's Jonah's stage voice.
I've never been to San Pedro. Man, is it crazy.
Yeah, that means St. Peter in English. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Leo Cabrillo Aquarium.
Is that what it is? Cabrillo.
Oh, Cabrillo.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Cabrito.
I remember before the UCB opened up in Los Angeles, there was a huge separation between improv and stand-up and sketch people. Like, they didn't really even hang out that much.
UCB reunited the crystal.
When UCB opened up here, it was almost like the epicenter happened where everyone started hanging out.
Yeah.
And there was, like, that appreciation.
It's kind of the way the UCB people are. I think they also sort of bridge that gap. Because... I was when I was talking to Stack about this the other day about stand-up in Chicago, because it used to be, in Chicago it was a very separate crowd, and I only knew a couple people that overlapped. One of them was Brian McCann, and one of them was Matt Besser, and Matt Besser is one of the founders of UCB. Yeah. So I don't think Amy ever did stand-up, but I think Ian Roberts did, and Matt Walsh has. So they kind of, you know, to them it was all one thing.
It was just comedy. Yeah, that's what I like about like UCB and comedy like right now, where it's just all about comedy. It's just about making funny things as opposed to this is my thing or this is.
I don't think of Chicago as a stand-up culture. When I think of Chicago, I think sketch and improv culture.
Yeah.
But a lot of good stand-ups are coming out from Chicago right now, like Bronger and Kyle Kinane and so
on. Oh, man, they're so fucking funny. But both their albums are amazing.
Yeah.
Kyle Kinane and Matt Bronger, you guys should check out if you haven't already. I assume they're just at Kyle Kinane, and then is Bronger just Bronger?
I think it's just Bronger.
Bronger.
And Dion Cole, who works on our show, is from Chicago and is very funny too.
That's cool.
I don't know those other guys because they don't work on the same TV show I work on.
I don't really believe that anything exists outside my show. Yeah. So
well, I just
there might be other stuff.
No, it's just that I don't like to actually have to work to get to know things. I like them to just come present themselves to me.
I like them to just make a nest in my brain and so I get information. Yep.
That's why I'm all about Miley Cyrus right now.
Yeah, it's
Party
really,
in the USA.
I didn't have
song.
To do any work. I just.
You know, I'm realizing recently is that there's. I feel like, and maybe there was a lot of bad art in our culture when I was younger, but I just didn't realize it because I was young and I didn't know any better. but I feel like there's this kind of overall vibe of convenience and laziness, like extra in America, and it doesn't just like you see it cross all sectors, like fast food, like Walmart, everything being in one place, and then with the art that people consume, like a Lady Gaga song to me is the laziest. Like as a listener, you don't have to think about it at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's just that good.
It's
right. That's what you're saying.
Whoa! I'm sorry. Wait?
Did I misconstrue everything you were about to say?
Is this where you say that you break the news in the podcast that you're a Lady Gaga fan?
No, I'm just saying that sometimes it can be catchy.
Because I could use something to get off of the day.
No. What made me realize that the Poker Face song is catchy is when Cartman from South Park sang it. I was like, it's not that bad. I had to have Cartman sing it, but I was like, it is.
I like Lady Gaga.
It's catchy like ball herpes is catchy. Like it's catchy in that way where you're like, fuck, it's in my head. Here's the thing about Lady Gaga. I can't stand her music, but she as a character, I am fascinated by, and I think it's a stroke of genius. I think her presentation, I think it's nice to see performers having these big characters that people can get it. But the music is, I mean, to me, it just makes me angry.
Well, it's not for you.
What's helpful? Yeah, exactly.
Why not?
What's
Why isn't helpful? Everything for me? I want the entire industry to bend to my likes.
I got a 9-year-old kid who really likes Lady Gaga. And not because she's weird, because he listens to music. He's starting to listen to music and he's starting to choose music.
It's got to be kind of fun and scary at the same time, right?
What the fuck do I care? You know, I mean, he can have his taste in whatever he wants. It's like, you know, I don't.
So you're a good dad. Sorry.
Sorry. No, I don't.
Well, as long as he's on the soccer field at 6 a.m.
I mean, he listens largely and has his whole life to the music that my wife and I choose. But now that he wants to, you know, when we get in the car and I'm driving him to school, if he wants to listen to Hits 1 on Sirius, you know, he can listen to the Hits 1 station. And for me, it's interesting because it's just, I haven't listened to Top 40 radio in 30 years or whatever it is. And
who's the hipster now?
And it's, huh?
Who's the hipster now?
But
I shut off at age 25 and I don't like anything new.
But it's also infuriating too. You know, it's like how stupid things are and how bad they are and like some of the songs that are just so sexist. And I'm not even, you know, I think, you know, sexism has its place.
Sure. But, you know, like in the workplace.
Yeah. Like in the workplace or in personal relationships. And I mean male and female sexism.
I can't believe that you can get fired for demanding that your assistant blow you. That is beyond me.
I'd do it for her, Your Honor.
As Sterling Cooper taught us nothing.
Like Lady Gaga, I think what's... I really appreciate her. Number one, the songs aren't, you know, of the other shit that's on the pop radio, it's genius in comparison. And she just, you know, she's become really popular. She can sing. She can play piano, which are like quantifiable talents that almost everyone else in music lacks.
Isn't that funny that
and
we're...
And she's
that,
just going to be a fucking weirdo.
Isn't it funny that we're at a point where all a pop star has to do is show, like, because of, like, Britney Spears, to show a modicum of talent?
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
And I think she writes some of her own songs.
Absolutely. Well, she writes songs, and she can sit and play the piano and improvise on the piano. And,
all right, I think I might be shifting, you know, my opinion on Gaga Gates.
Yeah,
wait,
yeah.
She can,
but also,
she can
just look at those costumes that she wears. Yeah. It's fantastic that somebody's that weird.
Yeah.
It's going to be, like, let herself basically be the plaything of the weirdest, gayest men on earth. Like, well, dress me up, fellas. Okay.
It's kind of Blondie. It's a little Blondie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the weird, the hot girl who's not afraid to be weird.
Yeah.
Is she hot? I actually
she's
don't even know what Lady Gaga looks like.
She looks
like Marilyn Manson, right?
No, she
Whoa.
Looks,
no,
she's
I don't
like,
know.
She's like Italian.
I mean, Marilyn Manson
looking.
With those
fantastic.
Weird, bizarre man tits that he had on, that kind of
during the
androgynous
era. Yeah, I don't know. I saw
like,
one thing.
Like,
where
a, like
they
just a genitalless space that he had yeah. down there.
I saw a side-by-side picture, and she was dressed up exactly like Marilyn Manson for something. I can't remember.
Well, she just looks
kind of
looks
fun.
Italian.
Yeah.
She
why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah, she's Italian, but she's, you know, I think she...
I think she's attractive.
She's pretty. She's pretty, but she's also like she's very Italian looking. You know, she's got like a big nose.
Those big. I'm half Italian, so I can say that Italians have large noses.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all right. I have a side of the family that is well endowed in the nose department, and that if you could fuck people with your nose, that would be a bragging right. But as
you
it
can,
turns, really,
you can, yeah, yeah,
really.
Here, turn off the machine. I'll show you.
All right,
the machine.
Get the crank. Hit the levers. When I say three,
I wish.
All right, we're back. I've been nose fucked by Andy Richter, which is the title of my biography.
It looked weird.
I couldn't tell which fluid.
I can't imagine.
Not,
wait,
not a bad weird.
So you got
more tears than I expected.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. It burns your eyes when you get up sex juice in your eyes.
And also, I did
sex
it good.
Juice.
Yeah,
I did it good.
Give me some of that sex juice.
Yeah, I just the cut to the moment of you like going in and out with your nose,
mm-hmm.
and like, is there, you would kind of go, wait, how did I get here? Like, you, I don't know if
there's it, never that moment.
Being mid-nose
no,
fuck.
No.
No?
No.
What,
you don't
what,
have time.
It's all
people,
hot.
People
yeah.
get into weird, I wonder
it's
how.
It's just like just smacking up against your face and your nose is about to break.
Yeah.
How do fetishes start, though? I've always wondered, like, what makes you get to a certain point to where that's like something you want to try?
People are obviously not that good at jerking off.
Yep.
And I must be a freaking genius because I did.
You don't, you don't need to get nose fucked.
Yeah. I don't need a hairbrush in my ass. I'm fine.
How'd you break your nose? Nose fucking incident. Another one?
Oh, boy.
Here reminds me of the time
again.
I had mine. Oh, you too? Oh, let's start a club website.
By the way, my pin number's cock. What's yours? Oh, I just did one of my pet peeves. You don't say pin number. Oh, it makes me so mad.
I can't remember the last time.
Because number is part of the acronym.
Right, right.
It's like saying
personal identification number, number. ATM machine, machine.
What's wrong with that?
It's irritating. It's redundant. It is a cultural redundancy.
Do you ever say RSVP, please?
No. Well, you could say that because you would say s'il vous plaît. So you could say please just to drop the English on a motherfucker. Just let
drop
him know.
The English
just let him know you're gonna come to the shit out of his party.
Just so you know, we're clear. This is in America.
Out of his
party's
out of his motherfucking
America.
Black tie function. Out of his weird Kubrickian eyes wide shut sex club where people are nose fucking each other. They did nose fuck each other,
yeah,
I think.
Masks. Yeah.
Did
nice.
They?
I think so.
Oh, awesome.
Or am I just thinking of Clockwork Orange? Boy, Kubrick loved nose fucking. I think we uncovered something interesting today.
Wow.
Let's watch Kubrick's classic.
From now on, if you give someone the Kubrick or you're Kubricking means to nose fuck someone.
I think Hal nose fucked Dave.
You think that's what happened?
It probably happened.
What are you doing, Dave? This is highly irregular. There was no dialogue in the movie.
You know there was nose fucking.
All
Spartacus.
Work and no nose fucking makes Jack a dull
you
boy.
Know.
A classic line from a movie.
Yeah, that's what it was, right? I haven't seen it in forever. I just remember. You know, the guy from Wings was in the TV remake.
Stephen Weber.
Yes.
I saw him on.
He changed
late
his name
night.
To the guy from Wings.
I went to late night. The night he was promoting that movie. when I was in New York.
Oh, really?
That's when Stephen Weber was on Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Do you remember that?
Have you ever seen Late Night with Conan O'Brien?
I think I would have been on the show then.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Good times.
But Matt bought some... When I did the Jimmy Fallon show a couple weeks ago, I hope this doesn't make you feel bad, but when we were in the NBC building, Matt's like, "Do you have any Conan O'Brien stuff left?" And the guy's like, "It's on the clearance table."
Yeah.
So he bought Conan stuff.
He like brought me and Jonah like we were going to a speakeasy.
Yeah. He's like, "Oh, right this way."
Wait, was it Tonight Show with Conan stuff?
Yeah.
No, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And it's smart to buy it up.
Yeah. That's what we got. I got a shirt. I got some magnets. But the weirdest part was
I had known it, I would have, because it was a whole box of hoodies. I would have just loaded up my car with hoodies, you know?
Yeah, if you ever work on a show, you got to save that stuff. Like that's like those early Warner Brothers guys, like Chuck Jones, just sending out cells to people for Christmas cards. And then they're worth shitloads of money.
What were you going to say?
I think it was just the weirdest part about the kid that was taking us to the stuff was like, what are you doing in town? We're like, what do you do in L.A.? It's like, I write on a show. He's like, oh, yeah? I'm an actor, writer, poet.
No.
And then I said, "Oh, you forgot to mention NBC Experience store worker." and then he told me he was in the movie Elephant. He was the photographer in the movie Elephant.
Yeah. Here's a poem for you.
It was self-evident. I mean, he didn't need to say that. He didn't need to say, that he was male either.
I'm an actor, poet, photographer. Do you want some more Blurg magnets from 30 Rock?
Spelled with a U.
Who knew?
Pardon me for coughing.
I'll
snip that part out.
You will.
And then you'll be referring to it, and I'll be referring to it.
Remember when you coughed earlier? Don't give ixnay! You see any movies lately you like? I never see any movies.
Wait, quiet.
Can you keep it down?
Be
with your
really
real work?
Quiet. I'll turn this up, if they can hear it. Hang on.
You think they can hear the?
Yeah, we could totally be listening to an executive meeting at the E Studios right now.
And that's why I think Web Soup should go on for never.
Oh my God! That's not where I thought that was going. That took a hard left turn at the end.
I gotta run to Comedy Central.
I think the only way to fix our problems is a culling.
here's a fun Andy Richter story. We were in San Francisco doing Match Game at the Jimmy Pardo hosted. It was a revamp of the 70s. Well, it wasn't called Match
Game.
It was called Game Show Explosion.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it was essentially matching answers with the word blank. And I was sitting in front of Andy Richter in a minivan, and he would grab a hold of the chair recliner thing and keep doing this on my seat. So I was going backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And so after like 10 minutes, it was so funny. You were so resigned. You're like, "I'm sorry, I'm an infant." I loved that experience. I'll sit in front of you any day. You can recline my seat as much as you feel like.
Would you ever think about doing it more? Because I really liked Andy Barker, PI.
Oh, thank you.
And also Andy Richter Controls the Universe was one of my favorite shows when it was out.
What about quintuplets? Never mind.
It's a guy who's never satisfied. Well, you didn't mention that.
Was that before you played quintuplets on Arrested Development, or was that?
Yeah, it was a direct like joke being done by the guys at Arrested Development.
All right.
But at that point, I think they already knew they weren't coming back, so they were just writing whatever shit they came to mind at 10 p.m.
My favorite was the stunt double brother.
Yeah.
You're in total control.
What was the experience? How did they shoot Arrested Development? Was it was there a lot of improv, or was it...
No, there wasn't a lot of improv. I mean, I think... I've never been on something where it's like it's totally improvised, just people going crazy.
And I worked on Talladega Nights.
I mean, but it's always within a little. It's not like you just go, "You guys are in here. You just found out your mother's dead. Go." Like it's never like that.
Make it funny.
Yeah, there'll be like a hole. It ended up getting cut from the movie, but there was in the movie Semi-Pro. I had to react to, there's a scene where I think Will Ferrell is firing me because he wants to sell my desk. He says, "Clean out your desk," because he's trying to make money, so he's going to sell my desk. And I had to react hurt and angry at being fired. So I just did a different thing each time. So, you know, like different things like, I cannot go back to the Coast Guard, you know, just stuff like that. But it was like, that was where, but I got to go back out in the, you know, because I made an entrance into the locker room. So I got to go back in the hallway and sit there and think of another one and then do another one. And I was trying to like break people up, you know, that's always a little bit fun. But that's the most I ever see of improvising. I've never been on a Robin Williams movie. You know, like there'll be a hole that you can fill, and then that's, you know, that's sort of it. And Arrested Development, it was all written out. I mean, all the sort of, you know, because especially with the voiceover having to tie it all together, it's all, well, and it all moves really fast.
Yeah, that's true, because the storylines were so intricate, the way that everything had to come back around. You can't really improvise.
And the jokes were so solid. You
know, I mean, just unfucking believable. That show, I miss that show.
Yeah, it was good. One of the brothers that I had to play is sort of, I think it was supposed to be the real me, like the real me, who was written as like an angry, bitter loser. And I go to see my brother, me, who's a very, you know, like very soft-spoken, very supportive guy, at Michael Cera's school. I don't remember his character's name.
George Michael.
At George Michael's school.
And, promises.
And I go, and he's, George, I think Jason Bateman's talking to my teacher character, and the real me comes up, and I want to talk to my brother, and Jason Bateman asks me if I'll come to some fundraiser. And I go, all right, well, tell my brother I'll be in the cafeteria waiting for him. And when he says, like, oh, and I say, like, is there a free dinner involved? And he says, yeah. And I said, all right, I'll do it. Tell my brother I'll be waiting in the cafeteria. And somebody running the product, like the writer that ran the shoot, the producer, I didn't know him, but he kept telling the director to sell the jokes of, like, oh, is there a meal involved? Oh, all right, I'll be there. And I'll be waiting in the... tell my brother I'll be waiting in the cafeteria. He wanted me to sell those jokes as, I'm so fat.
Right.
That food is like crack to me, like it would be to a crackhead.
Which must feel really good, right?
The director came up to me and tried to explain it to me a couple of times. And it took a couple of times for me to realize what he was getting at. And I was like, oh... I was like, okay, all right, fine. And I did a trick that I learned working on a terrible movie with Terrence Stamp, in which he was given directions that he didn't agree with, and he went like, oh, yes, I see, and then did exactly what he wanted.
Yes, General Zod.
And then they come back, and they come and say, oh, I don't know if you're understanding. You should do it this way. He goes, oh, right, yes, yes, yes. And then they go again, and he'd do exactly what he wanted, until the director just went, all right, fine, let's move on. And so I decided... I mean, I'll do whatever I'm told, except if it's to, like, do the fatty loves to eat joke.
Right, right, right.
And I was like, and he came, and I did it again, and he came up, and he's like really explicit, and I said, I'm not going to do that. And I said, no. And he laughed. He's like, no one's ever just said no before to me. And I was like, well, I'm sorry, I'm not going to sell the joke that way. And then the producer guy came over. And he starts telling me how he wants to do it. And I said, oh, you mean like I'm so fucking fat that that I just love to eat, and that any opportunity to shove food in my fat fucking face is what really... And Bateman's standing there loving it. And I'm like, oh, you mean any chance to shove food in my fat fucking face? That's what I'm doing here? Like I'm a desperate fucking animal who just needs food in his fat face? Yeah, yeah, like that. Yeah, yeah, okay, sure, no problem. Go sit down, you'll see.
Yeah, 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 like that.
That's good, because I always took it as you just wanted a free meal. Like,
yeah.
Exactly,
and that's what I was playing, and that was what I felt was... I mean, it's not like I was just being a baby. Yeah. It's a funnier joke that my career has declined to the point where it's like, oh, a meal? All right, sure, why not? I'll be there.
Exactly.
You know? But no, they wanted... Oh, tell my brother I'll be in the cafeteria.
Sweating. Yeah. Oh, put more fat sweat on his brow.
Cream pies.
He needs to look fatter. He needs to look fatter.
Yeah.
Did I tell the Dan Schneider story on this podcast yet? My buddy Dan Schneider, who was on Head of the Class.
Uh-huh.
And we worked
together. Does he have something to do with iCarly?
Yeah, he created the show.
Yeah,
Dan has created, like, pretty much every live action hit show for Nickelodeon, yeah, like Nickelodeon, all that, yeah, yeah. The Amanda Bynes Show. I think you might have done Drake and Josh. I know this because I did a cartoon Nickelodeon, not because I watch creepily watch kids programs.
I do.
Someday I do. You're gonna be old enough, iCarly. Someday.
Not that long.
Really, just a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Stick around. Whatever.
Yeah, you know, Your Honor, she's 16 yeah. now, but think of it as me borrowing yeah. against a mortgage.
And Your Honor, Your Honor, you know she is cruising headlong into mental illness.
Come on.
And who is more sexually available than the mentally ill?
I'm just trying to coast that bird in for a landing. You can call me the Sully Sullenberg, a young pussy.
He's using the come on, dude defense, and it's really working.
The come on, dude defense. Well, Dan is a crazy smart, funny guy, and yeah. you know, super snarky and really
he
funny.
He was on Saved by the Bell. Who was he on?
No, he was on Head of the Class.
Or Head of the Class.
Yeah.
And who was he on that?
Played the big guy. Anyway, he, Dennis. Dennis was yeah, the character. Yeah, yeah. And so I just have a weird memory for
he's the guy that sat in the back with a computer.
And he was like computer. The snarky, yeah. he was like the funny guy in the room. So he gets cast in the show, and he's like, finally, I get cast to be funny and not the fat guy. Because up to that point, he played a bunch of fat guys.
Yeah.
So he's super psyched. He's thrilled about the job. The show initially was much different than what it ended up becoming.
Yeah.
And first day he shows up, he has a wardrobe fitting, and they hand him cargo pants, and the wardrobe says very earnestly, the wardrobe woman goes, so your pants have a lot of pockets in them, you know, for snacks and things. And he was just, like, it just instantly Bro. Took the wind out of his sails. He was like, oh my God, again?
Snacks and yeah. things.
For snacks and things.
Do you think it was just a benign comment on hers? On her part, do you think it was because he then
it was
found
into the script.
That it was an entire, there was an entire institutional directive. I think make it, sure he eats.
I think it was just sort of that kind of bummer moment of like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
you see me as the fat guy. But
yeah.
How do you feel about the Billy Connolly years of Head of the Class?
I don't know.
Let's find out.
Who cares?
I'll give him a call.
Seriously. I could go to my grave not knowing
those were
that.
Dark years. All right, Andy, we're going to find out about this whole Billy Connolly. I like Billy. I worked with him once, and he's a super, super great, great guy. Apparently, there's these stories where Billy Connolly and Kevin Nealon and Steve Martin sit around and play the banjo with each other.
Wow.
Just one banjo.
One giant banjo.
Did the chords, and one did the bottom four strings, and the other guy did the top fifth
That's
string.
How hard a banjo is to
yeah,
play.
Exactly.
You need three world-class comedians. Yeah.
Stevie Ray and Jimmy Vaughan used to do that in concert.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
what, double to, up on the one guitar?
Yeah, the Fabulous Thunderbirds would open for Stevie Ray Vaughan, and they would switch back very quickly.
Because they're tough enough. That's a song they wrote. When you're improvising, when you're improvising, or you know, if you're like you said in semi-pro, you know, you got to go in with a different choice every time just to fuck around.
Right.
What do you do when you're, and then I think this is a question a lot of performers would love, what do you do when your brain hits that wall, where you just fucking hit the wall, where you're like, there's nothing else comedy that's going to come out of this brain right now, I'm tired, I'm out of choices.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, because I know the UCB, like that kind of Chicago improv directive is like, don't think, just say whatever, you know.
That's more the UCB one. The Chicago Improv Olympic would be more like think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't
yeah.
know that.
Because Del Close was super. I mean, the sort of Del Close's, I think, ideal of improv is lots of referential stuff about very arcane topics.
Did you work with Del?
Yeah, I was in some classes that he taught, and that part of it was good in the '60s and the early '70s, but I don't think it relate so much now. Like people don't like the fact that you know enough to reference Canterbury Tales or a very specific detail from Canterbury Tales or you know the latest Lancet medical journal, you know, those things people don't give a shit
I blame the internet
lot.
Yeah, because in the '60s and '70s you actually had to go to a library and look stuff up.
Yeah,
yeah.
And now it's like, oh, great, you know Canterbury Tales. I have the internet, too.
Yeah. yeah.
Good for you.
Well, they say, like, Wikipedia is Hollywood's ghostwriter.
I have a weird back and forth. With, someone made a Wikipedia page for me. I would claim it if it were me. I would be honest, but I did not make it. And I have this, I just gave up, but I have this weird, fun back and forth game with someone I made a Wikipedia page where they keep planting a fake brother named Peter. And they keep assigning him different roles, like, And at one time, he played football for like the Chicago Bears or something. And then so I kind of went and I'm like, yeah, I better take this off. And then they replaced it with...
It sounds like somebody, a friend of yours fucking...
It sounds like someone, someone fucking with me. And he has a different job every time, this fake brother, Peter. And I've started being asked in interviews, like, so I understand you have a brother, Peter, who also does stand-up. I'm like, no, that's Wikipedia.
The only reason to be the brother of a murderer?
Well, it's Wikipedia. It's Wikipedia. Hard so Wikipedia. Which is fake.
Oh.
Yeah. The only reason I have a Wikipedia page is because, like, as a prank, Dan Mintz created one for me. And to just, like, put my real last name and, like, put, like, all this information about Hawaii and then just delved into how I committed suicide. And he didn't tell me about it. I came across it because someone sent it to me. He's like, hey, you're on Wikipedia. And I was like, Oh, my God.
Do your parents know about it? They're not going to stumble across it, are they?
No, they don't know how to Google
anything.
Oh,
well, there you go.
They'll wonder how they can get to it through...
Heard you killed yourself. Is this true?
You're talking to me right now.
I know. Are you dead?
No, my voice. I'm talking. This is real time.
I thought maybe this was some time vortex and your voice was trapped in some kind of electronic consciousness.
Oh, Mom, for the first time, I appreciate the words you say.
So I want to have a James Lipton moment.
Andy, if your Wikipedia overview could say anything, what would it say?
Wait, keep going. I'm still jerking off. If my could have an overview?
You don't have to answer that question seriously.
Oh, I was just trying to be
a serious journalist for a second.
A Caucasian male.
With a voice.
Into water sports. No, something like that.
You mean like water polo, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Golden water polo.
Yeah.
What's the goal? I don't understand.
Water skiing on piss.
Could you make that clear?
That's what I do with my millions.
That's the golden parachute.
That's what I do with my millions. Make a water skiing lake filled with piss.
Why wouldn't you? You know what's funny is that there would be people who would make that happen. You'd have an agent who'd be like, "Yeah, he wants to water ski on piss. What's the problem? Make it happen."
I don't understand it. It's not for me to understand. It's for me to make it happen.
When you started working and making money, what's the most extravagantly weird thing you blew a lot of money on that you just had to have? Was there anything?
The thing that comes to mind is a shearling coat that I got from Gucci, which number one, the fact that Gucci had anything to fit me was amazing to me. I got it in Chicago. I found it in Chicago because there's fat people in Chicago, so Gucci has
got insulated
clothes,
hard winters.
Fat people, but it's this shearling coat that. Like a shearling coat is normally the leather's on the outside and then like where it's sewn, the little bits of shearling will pop out and it'll be around the edges. It's the opposite. So the leather's on the inside. So the outside of the coat, it looks like a coat made out of teddy bear fabric. And I think at the time it was like $3,000, which was just absurd.
Well, they've come down a lot now.
No, I mean, it's still absurd, but it'd probably be like $12,000
right
now. And I still have it, and I used to wear it, but it's pretty fucking, it looks like a pimp coat, and, you know, and technically it's not really fur, so I hope I'll never get, I haven't worn it in years, living in LA, I carry my own coat with me.
Listen, if you would just want to consider when you guys start doing the show again,
right,
wear the coat on every show, make it your thing.
I'd have to be in a refrigerated chamber.
Chamber.
What's the problem with that?
Watch Andy sweat.
Have you guys talked about what the new show is going to be?
Not at all. Honestly, not at all.
No.
I'm sure Conan's been thinking about it, and I've been thinking about it, but it's like, it's not. When he and I get together, we don't talk about stuff like that, you know, really. I mean, we've been talking about the live show, and that's pretty much consuming all our attention is what the hell that's going to be. And then he and I don't talk about the next TV show other than to say sort of him to go, well, it's going well with them. I don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, it looks better. It looks more positive than negative.
You still got that coat?
Yeah.
I got a refrigerator gag.
I'm wearing it right now, Daddy.
How did you get involved with the show initially? Were you already friends or did they?
No. I knew Robert Smigel, who I'd met through a mutual friend. Here, I was in L.A. Doing a show called The Real Life Brady Bunch that we saw.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I saw The Real Life Brady Bunch at the Westwood Playhouse.
Yeah. And I was in that. And I played Mike Brady in that. And that was something we started in Chicago, some dopey show that we started there.
I did see that with you in it. And I just did not connect the pieces until now because I was in, I think I might have been in, it was early 90s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in college at the time.
And it was, I was also, there was a game show that preceded The Real Life Brady Bunch, and I was the announcer in the game show and then played Mike Brady and was out here that summer. Well, it would have been the summer of 92, I believe, and met Robert Smigel, like I said, through this mutual friend of mine who had worked on SNL, and just hung out and had fun and went out for drinks and stuff. And then a few months later, he called me and said, and we hadn't talked for a few months, and by that time, I had left the Brady Bunch and was out here working on the movie Cabin Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me and said, I'm going to... And I'd heard about Letterman's replacement being this guy, Conan O'Brien, just on the news and stuff. And I remember I went to... Jeff Garlin taped a pilot in the old Desilu studio, which is over on Las Palmas, I think, just below, like by the Del Taco at Highland Santa Monica.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's literally like Tranny Hooker Central.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's where Desilu was.
Wait, Tranny Hooker?
Tranny.
Oh.
Oh, no. All that money.
I just let him nose fuck
me. Times
yeah.
have I,
You're
how many times
have
I told
your
you
Facebook
chicks
page.
Don't wear cups?
They shit in them.
But
douche.
They Jeff Garlin did this pilot, and I sat in front of Bob Odenkirk and Carol Leifer as they talked all about this guy Conan taking over the job. And this was like 2 days after Conan was announced. So I found out, oh, they know who Conan is, and Bob really knew Conan. And then. Robert said, you want to meet Conan? I'm going to be head writing on his show. And he was out here working on The Simpsons. He and I met at Junior's Deli and just hit it off. And I wrote some material and was the first writer hired on the late night show. Back in, this would have been, it was in 93, I think like March of 93.
93.
Yeah.
A young Eddie Vedder taught us grunge.
The hard way.
Fucking, man. Well, that's amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, I always say we would have... We figured out, too, that we were both at a party at Bob Odenkirk's house about... Because I knew Bob because I'd been on an improv team with a woman that he was seeing at the time. And they lived together in an apartment.
Oh, you were in the Bob Odenkirk fuckers?
No.
It was a great improv team.
Kind of redundant.
So I knew Bob through that connection, and I went to his... I went to a party at Bob's house... when I was here doing Cabin Boy. And Conan was there too, but I just didn't meet him at that party. And we figured that out a few years after knowing each other. So eventually, I'm sure we would have ended up knowing each other.
Yeah.
You know, like, because we already knew so many people in common that, you know, fate would have interceded.
What was but you were just hired as a writer. When was it, when was the decision made to, like, have you just speak?
It was always kind of floating around in there, I think. I mean, I've never asked specifically, Robert, like, how much did you think of me being the sidekick? And I've been asked the question, so I always think, I guess I should ask him so I know for sure, like, if they thought, at what point they thought you'd make a good sidekick. Because it kind of snuck up on me. I wasn't thinking about it. But he and I played well together and would fuck around in the office a lot. And I just, you know, we complimented each other, kind of just naturally, comedically. And so we were kind of doing bits around the office anyway. And the first time that Conan did it, sort of like a practice thing, which was basically just turning, when they start a show like this, the first, I mean, you've probably experienced this, they just put you in front of the camera and you sit there and they change lights and, you know.
That's the most grueling day.
Yeah.
I mean, for like... Not that it's a hard day, but but you will sit for like 4 hours just in one place while they adjust lights and
look at it, and people are in another room judging how you're looking. Yeah.
It's probably harder than building a railroad. It's probably a lot harder than building a railroad.
Much harder.
I mean, I'm not going out on a limb when I say that it's harder than chipping
and probably
rocks
more dead Chinese, too.
Way more. Have died in lighting schematics.
Mm-hmm. But
I got those shoes off a dead Chinese.
Back from in the future, two, three.
Three.
From the first time that he was out there, Robert said to me, he's got to sit out there for a while. Go sit next to him. And then the next thing that he did, he like interviewed one of the PAs. And this was all not even on our stage. This was in 8H because our stage wasn't finished yet. Mm-hmm. This was up on Saturday Night Live on Bob Costas's later set.
Yes.
And then they had him do a cooking demonstration and stuff. But I always was hanging out there. You know, like I always was sitting next to him or hanging out nearby. And then as it came time to do the show, Robert said to me, called me, came into my office and said, hey, do you want to be like the sidekick on the show?
Holy shit.
And I'm such an asshole. I was like, because we had this notion that we were going to be like a hybrid of sketch and talk show.
Yeah.
And that we would have a recurring cast of characters and play like the late night with Conan O'Brien players.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't know. Does that mean I can't do sketchy kind of stuff too? Yeah. And I was like, well, let me think about it and talk to my wife about it. And then he left. Although I wasn't married at the time, but he left and I was like instantly like, who the fuck am I kidding? Like, I'm going to say no.
Right.
Like, no. Like, you're guaranteed to be on TV every night. Do you want that?
I don't know.
I don't know. I might be able to be in sketches every now and then.
I know. I've had a lifelong dream to be a performer. Yeah. Right? I don't know if I really.
And also, we quickly realized that the notion of doing a nightly sketch type show was a fucking pipe dream.
Yeah.
At first we were like, forget topical humor, and then like, oh my god, I hope Michael Jackson does something bad.
Was it hard please. Was the first year kind of hard?
Oh yeah.
Just figuring out.
A lot of work. We just jam-packed the show with comedy, which is amazing to me to just think about how much comedy we would do. There was comedy in almost every act, and a lot of like really produced comedy, like, you know, 5-minute animated bits that were like stop motion claymation animated bits. Yeah, and yeah.
Did you get
remotes
a sense
that we'd go shoot 2 days and come back and edit 12 hours for 7 or 8 minutes of screen? I mean, just crazy amount of work that no one is willing to do
anymore.
Did
you get a sense for how it was going? Because this was sort of pre everyone has internet, so did you get a sense?
No, did not.
Kind of nice, right?
It was stressful. Yeah, it was kind of nice. There was stuff in the paper, you know, but it was also crazy.
Weren't they just like renewing you guys like week to week?
Yeah, they were at one point week to week. And I guess there was one point where we were unofficially, technically taken off the air.
Duh.
Where on a Friday they told Conan got to live an entire weekend thinking that his show had been canceled.
Ugh.
And then
now he
Monday,
gets to live a life like that. Thanks, NBC.
Now he knows for sure.
But they didn't, you know, Conan and Jeff Ross, our producer, never let anybody know all the like really ugliness. You know, it's like they were the parents not letting us know that we're any moment going to be evicted. You know, we just sort of chugged along making the show and trying to. And but there was definite. There were points when it seemed to uptick. Like there was one of the first things was David Letterman came on the show, and that mm-hmm. got a lot of attention, and he sort of gave us his papal blessing. And and then our ratings just kept going up and up and up and up. And after a couple of years of not crashing and burning and failing, and also, too, them not being able to get their shit together to find somebody to replace us, because they were trying to get Greg Kinnear to replace us, and they were taping secret, because he was on after us, and they were taping, like, secret hour-long shows out
here.
Oh, that's
fucked up.
That were tanking, that were shitty. We just would hear, like, in over the transom, oh, yeah, they taped some test shows, hour-long test shows with Kinnear, and they're awful. And at the same time, he was becoming a movie star, so he, you know, he wasn't into the idea of it either.
Well, it's just a test.
So it's not just that we're so great. It's also that they didn't,
yeah, but,
you know.
But it's a testament and something that does not exist much in the TV business anymore, which is, and whether they did it by will or because they had nothing else to put on, they let your show grow.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, like now, shows get like an episode, 2 episodes, and if they're not mega hits, they're fucking gone.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, you know, you're going to get more loyal fan base if you let a show develop a little bit, give it room to breathe and grow and get better. I mean, no show is amazing the first season,
yeah.
pretty much. You know, like, Like the first couple episodes of Arrested Development are still like, okay, I see where they're going, and then it gets amazing. But
yeah.
You know, if they didn't let that, or The Simpsons, like the first season of The Simpsons is almost unwatchable.
Yeah, and well, now it is. At the time, it still was.
It was pretty cutting edge,
and it's come full circle.
Yeah.
Everybody.
No,
I still like The Simpsons. Well, anyway, I don't want to dominate any more of your time, but Andy Richter, is there anything you want to promote? There's at least a couple hundred people that listen to this.
Well, we're on tour, I guess. I think they're all sold out, so...
So go fuck yourselves.
Yeah, go fuck yourselves. Or, no, I guess... I don't know. No, not really. You know? Well, if we come to your town... You know, look around at 7-Elevens.
The Andy Richter wagon
stuff.
Is a coming down the street. What can it be?
Find
for
out what
me?
Hotel I'm staying at and look up at the windows, and you might see the curtains drawn, and that'll be me.
You just might see a pressed ham up against the glass.
Yeah.
He nose fucking someone?
He's nose fucking someone.
That's right.
Well,
you're
awesome.
A mayor.
What I do want people to know about you is that you are a delightful and super nice guy.
Oh, thank you.
In addition to being super funny. I mean, I know as young comics, we all were, you know, you were definitely an influence on all of us. So,
oh, thank you.
So we certainly appreciate you taking the time
to... makes me feel old.
...to come to this. I used to watch you
we're
when I
young.
I get that now from people who are like, I watched Single Out when I was in fourth grade.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You look like an adult now.
Yeah, I am an adult now. I've had 3 abortions.
What's wrong with your voice?
I've had 3 abortions.
This that's is what a, happens.
That's yeah. right, kids.
That's a record for Christmas elves.
That's right, kids. Remember what Andy Richter says. If you want to look like an adult, have a couple abortions.
Yeah. It ages you really nicely.
It'll make you grow up.
Like a steak.
Cigarettes are so 60s. Abortions are what the kids are doing to look older now.
Yeah.
Look at Samantha in the 7th grade. She's had 3 abortions already. She looks hot.
I can't believe I got to show my ID when I buy a pack of abortions now.
a pack of abortions. Yeah. Roaming the countryside.
They're cheap. They're I save money.
Way.
I buy them by the carton.
Yeah, they're cheaper
that
way.
I just got to do.
So abortions are in a pack, right?
Yeah. I buy a pack of them at a time. Yeah. Should buy them by the carton, though. It'd be cheaper that way.
Sometimes when I go to Nevada, I get them. They're cheaper.
All right, guys. The end.
Over and out.
Hey, guys. It's Chris. Thanks for listening to the Nerdist Podcast number 7 with Andy Richter. All right, couple quick announcements before I let go of your ears and let you get on with your day. Live shows. If you live in Los Angeles, we're going to be doing the Nerdist Podcast live at Largo. Our special guest will be Adam Savage of Mythbusters. I don't know if he's going to bust any myths, but maybe if you think there's a myth that he can't speak in public, then he'll bust that by speaking in public on our show. That happens Monday, April 5th. Also, April 10th, Seattle, Washington. I enjoy Seattle. I'll be doing stand-up there with Mike Furman of Hard and Firm. There might be some songs played, so come on out to that. Details on these shows are at, of course, Nerdist.com. And say, if you want to email us, you now have the power to do so with the fabulous Nerdist Podcast email, which is, quite logically, podcast@nerdist.com. And lastly, I would like to say a very sincere and heartfelt thanks to you for continuing to listen to this podcast. I mean, a lot more people are listening to this than we thought we're going to. So I don't know how it happened, but we certainly appreciate it. So on behalf of myself and Matt and Jonah, honestly, thank you so much. And we hope you stick with us and enjoy the episodes to come. Hooray! Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.